Blog Talk Radio.
I prefer to do it because I find it entertaining and amusing. We're going to talk about the Toronto Police. I have some views on it. I'm sure Aaron has some views on it. I'm sure that some of my, well, I'm sure when it comes to something as contentious as the Toronto Police and how they act in public and how they enforce the law. And part of their enforcement of the law, of course, requires them to interpret the law. So some police officers think they can point their finger at your car and go, you are going this amount of speed. And then they'll give you a ticket, and then you've got to go to court and basically say, but he used his finger, judge. And the judge goes, wait a second, he's not supposed to use his finger. And, well, the judge says, well, I have to throw it out of court. I mean, did you show the guy the radar gun that it was at that speed that established that he was going that fast, or she? Well, some police officers continue to do things that they know they're not allowed to do. And the SIU and the Toronto Police, especially Police Chief Bill Blair, are at loggerheads. Now, the discussion as far as the police are concerned, not Bill Blair, but voices in his corner are suggesting that the SIU has no business telling the police do, or to tell the police chief what to do or say. The question really is do they have the right to ask any questions, pertinent or otherwise, and or ask for updates on how complaints are moving along? And that question, in this corner, I'll answer this way. If there's an issue out there and the police have been asked to work on it, why shouldn't the SIU ask where it's at? Why shouldn't the SIU be there to remind the police force that they're looking at something and that they look at it at full value and see what's really going on? Now, this is coming from a guy who has family in the police force. We have very close friends in the police force. I have nothing but the utmost respect for the majority of the police officers. I separate myself at this point and probably irritate family and friends that are police officers when I say this. My beef is not with the majority. And what people want to know, and I among them, we want to know what are the police doing with the police officers who either temporarily have a brain cramp and do something they shouldn't be doing that may not be so harmful, but sets a stage for that police officer to think that they can do stuff like that. In other words, are the police interested in nipping misbehavior by the police force in the bud? Or are they willing to hide the fact that police officers do things and be difficult when it comes to the SIU to figure out whether they're doing something wrong or not? That's the question I have to ask. And I think the people, generally speaking, have the right to ask that question. So, yeah, that's a contentious issue. Maybe we'll jump right in there and I'll get Aaron to come in on board. Instead of going over everything, we'll go one thing at a time. Well, let's start with the big one. This week, the big one is the police force, and it is the fact that Mr. Scott is asking Mr. Blair, or Chief Blair, where are we at, buddy? You know, Ian Scott, he's the head of the Ontario Police Watchdog, and he has at least publicly criticized Bill Blair. And Ian Scott feels that complaints are being ignored about police officers that may or may not have done something that is not right, legally, morally, and or as part of the oath that the police make. As far as I know, it says it on the cars, to serve and protect, not just about serving fines and protecting themselves. It's about serving the public and protecting the public as well. So if they don't do that, what option do we as citizens have when it comes to the police force, that thin blue line? Well, Ian Scott is asking a pertinent question, and I think the police should answer, and they should answer on a regular basis, in fact, where they are in each case. What have they done this week? And, backpedaling, all that wonderful stuff. It doesn't matter whether you're the police, whether you're a Senate member who has been expensing what's not right, whether you're an illegal politician, performing illegal acts such as taking kickbacks, which puts you in jail. That happened in Montreal. I mean, let's face it, the mayor of Toronto has been lambasted and totally, publicly ridiculed for his behavior. Is that all right? Well, I don't know. That's something for us as a society to consider and to either think is right or is wrong. But it has to be discussed openly. And I think transparency is an important thing. And the problem is I don't think there is enough transparency when it comes to the police force. It's not a secret society. Many of them may be members of a secret society, but it's not necessarily a secret society. All right, so we will get to our friend, whose name is Aaron. I'm calling you, Aaron. You better be ready to answer the phone. So that's the first thing we'll talk about. If I leave hyphens in there, I don't think it works. I'll tell you in a sec. Let's see if it works. I don't think it works. Yeah, you see, you got to take out those hyphens, Frank. Computer doesn't like the hyphens when you're dialing out. Oh, technology, technology, technology. Oh, I just love technology. Maybe it'll work now. Looking good. Says no one answered. Wow. This is getting to be a habit. Your phone isn't ringing? I love that. He says his phone isn't ringing. Well, I can assure you that I'm calling. Okay. I don't want to say the number out loud. I copied it, and let me see. Yeah. Stop sending me messages, because now the number is disappearing. Yeah, that number's right. Yeah, that number's right. Yeah. Dude, I'm trying. Nope, saying call failed. Oh, here, let's try this one. Let's close this. Let's try this one. This is fun. I have to say this is fun. Your phone's not ringing. Well, maybe it's off the hook, dude. Oh, well, it looks like I'm going solo again tonight. This is funny. I don't know what else to tell you, dude. Here, I'll try this. I'll go out of the studio, okay? I'm going to go out of the studio. Don't know if you can hear me when I go out of the studio. Then I'll come back in the studio and see if it resets itself. But let's see. Let's see if it does. Now, Aaron, I'd like to say on air the number that I'm dialing, but I don't want to do that because if I do that, people will know your phone number. So, yeah, it's a serious subject. I grew up at a time when our culture was the culture of unacceptance. There we go. Finally, it's working, buddy.
Hello, Frank.
Hey, wow, that was an adventure.
Finally, it worked. What the heck?
I don't know. I mean, maybe one of the topics we should discuss tonight is Blog Talk Radio and all its F-ups.
Technology fail. Woo!
Hard to believe, isn't it? Did you hear anything I said about the start? About the police?
I did hear a few things about the police and training and politics and a few other things, so I'm interested to get going on that.
Okay, well, I'm starting with the police and to review what I said, and I'll just skim over what I was saying. Bottom line is this: the Toronto police are made up of people. People are human, and being human, they're prone to making mistakes. The question is, are the police in the business of ensuring those mistakes are corrected, B, not repeated, and C, the most important thing, not built on? In other words, if a cop thinks he can get away with pointing his finger at a citizen and saying that's a radar gun and then goes into court and all that happens is he gets told, well, that guy gets off. That's not enough. The judge should be telling him, you can't do that. You know it's illegal. You're forcing this guy to come into court or this woman to come into court for no reason. So don't do it. Now I'm going to give you 5 demerit points for basically enforcing a law that doesn't exist. You understand what I'm saying? Like, the police have to be transparent and they have to be accountable. And that's just, this is a small potato thing, but to me, that is generally what's wrong with the police force, is that the police force needs to be as accountable as anybody else in government and in society and the people they even go after, for that matter.
No, I think accountability and transparency is the most important thing. However, a lot of the times you run into a phenomenon which a lot of people call the thin blue line. And that's where police will frequently band together and put the potentially guilty officers behind this mystical shield of the badge, It's what we do to protect the public. You know, you don't have the right to question us or to question our decision making and what we do. That I think is a phenomenon that a lot of people claim to encounter.
I know how it works. I know how. It works.
So you've had firsthand experience of the thin blue wall, then.
I sure have. It's quite clear that the police protect themselves, as they will want to do, being the only ones making the decision as to whether they should be corrected or not. If you have, you know, it's called conflict of interest. You can't go to a police officer and say to him, listen, I'm having a problem with a police officer. Can you help me?
Yeah, I mean, funny weird thing is this even happens in the States too. You know, I mean, there was a junior officer that filed a complaint against one of his superiors because he knew the superior was driving drunk. And that officer then became a target of harassment by his fellow officers. So, look at stuff like that and how that happens, and you just wonder to yourself, how does something like that happen? They're sworn to uphold the laws, and yet they consider themselves above it. You know?
That's the scary part. That's the scary part. That is truly the scary part. When the anarchists are the police, you're in trouble. You know,
no argument.
A wonderful thing for some. anarchy's a topic of discussion for many when it comes to political views. But when anarchy is acted on by a powerful group like the police, it's dangerous. It's not just scary, it's dangerous. And you can't convince a police officer that he is responsible for what he does if he doesn't think he is.
Well, I mean, if they're never held to account in the first place, there's nothing there to enforce that. You know,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, it's like spoiled kids. If they're never told they're wrong or that they can't have something, they'll always grow up thinking they'll be able to get it.
Yeah, well, I'm referring, you know, what we're discussing here is I'm discussing something here that I see in the news that I find poignant and important, and that is Ian Scott, head of Ontario's police watchdog, the SIU, is calling out the police chief, Bill Blair, on possibly ignoring complaints about his officers. In other words, they'll hear them, they'll pretend to take notes, they'll pretend to go talk to somebody, they'll pretend to do something about it, and nothing happens. Now, that's from the perspective, now, I'm being unfair here, and I admit it. That's from the perspective of somebody who doesn't think the officers are acting in the interests of, the public, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that really what's going on? Well, unfortunately, you can't go to a police officer and tell them to judge another police officer. That's just ridiculous. That's just ridiculous. And if the SIU can't ask about cases that are in the work and where they're at, then basically you're saying the police cannot be questioned about anything. And that's not right. And that's not right. They have a responsibility as good citizens, police officers do, as any other citizen, on ensuring that they don't break the law. And I believe the law is, and law says, the SIU has a right to investigate the police. So don't stand in the way.
So you're talking about police then?
I'm talking about the SIU. Does it do its job? And if it is part of its job to make sure that cases that have been brought in front of the police chief and or the system in place to guard against, you know, police officers who are making mistakes. I'm trying to be polite here. You know, we all know the reason why this is all becoming really intense is because of an incident in a streetcar that I'm not going to tell you or pretend to know the facts in that case. But there were a lot of questions. There was a lot of, citizenry, complaining about what happened. Many a person thought what happened and the outcome wasn't justified by what they understand to be the case.
Now, the fact of the matter is we as ordinary citizens will probably never know exactly what happened that particular night. I mean, you can watch the cell phone video on the internet, and you can hear people, you know, bloviating on about it on the radio, but we're never going to be able to talk to the actual officers involved. You know, the officer that was involved has already been charged with second-degree murder. You know, you're not going to get to talk to him because the investigation is currently ongoing. Anything that he releases to the media could potentially prejudice the case against him, could taint the case. And,
but Aaron,
you know,
Aaron, should, in your opinion, should he have been charged, considering the facts that you may or may not know?
Considering what I actually know, there may have been something there to charge him, but I'm not cognizant of all of the charges the evidence in the case. You know, it's not my position to say that this officer should or shouldn't be charged with second degree murder or not, because I don't have all the facts available to me. I have what goes on talk radio. You see the television reports, you hear the pundits. The pundits have all got their opinions about what's going on. The ordinary citizens sound off on places like HuffPo and you know, the Toronto Sun comment section, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And some people are saying the kid deserved it. Some people are saying the kid didn't deserve it. Some people are saying the cop totally overreacted. You know, the fact of the matter is I wasn't on the streetcar. I wasn't at the scene, and I would not be able to make a judgment one way or the other. The only thing that we can hope for in this particular case is that the truth comes out.
Let me ask you this, all right?
Sure.
Let me ask you this. Because now tasers are going to become part of the frontline equipment, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be things that are going to go out with the officers. I guess they refer to them as the first in line when it comes to incidents like this. Where there may be a mentally unstable person, and let's I want to make this clear. I'm not talking about that case. I just want to. I'm trying to extrapolate what people are interested in doing or understanding. In my opinion,
mm-hmm.
In my opinion, this raised an issue. And if a person of mental stability. In question, their stability is in question, and police officers are at a distance. At what distance and what level of threat are they allowed to use deadly force? Is deadly force required when someone's in a contained area, you know, and they can't hurt anyone else, and you can wait them out? Do you need to use lethal force?
It's a very good question. I mean, it's not unfortunately something I'd be able to just whip out an answer off the top of my head and just say, well, you know, if it's 30 feet, then this. If it's 25 feet, then this. If it's 15 feet, then this. It's not, you know, I mean, it is possible
when they're trained, is there not a line when they're training that should be crossed, you know, and, you know, that should be crossed by an individual, whether they're mentally unstable, whether they're drug-induced, crazy, or whatever it is, whatever the reason, wouldn't you think that there'd be an impending danger that needed and required lethal force? I mean, the level of the force should be reflective of the situation, no? Don't you think?
Well, the amount of force used by the police, yes, should ideally, I mean, in the best of all possible worlds, it should correspond directly to the amount of threat presented. That, I mean, that's...
Okay, let me try it a different way. Suspect is on the ground. He's being held by a couple of police officers. When does force stop? When do you stop using force? In other words, when can a police officer be expected to stop kicking a person who's on the ground? When can that stop? When should that stop?
Well, in the case where an officer is making an arrest, once the individual has been properly subdued, that should be the end of it. Ideally.
So they shouldn't be kicking them while they're down and being held.
No. No, I mean, you know, like incidents like what occurred during the G20 summit. Those sorts of things shouldn't happen.
Okay, now we've established there are things that shouldn't happen by the police, right? So what action does society have to take and expect in the event that a police officer goes over the line? Again, you're mentioning specific cases. I'm trying to point out without – I don't want to discuss any ongoing case. I'm trying to be specific in what I'm saying, a generic in looking for a response. So if an individual is under control of the police and they're holding the guy down by two officers, a third police officer shouldn't be kicking the guy while he's being held. Would that be a fair statement on my part?
Yes.
Would that require an investigation?
If the individual is kicked and the evidence is presented and caught, then yes. Here's the problem that you run into a lot of times, Frank. A lot of the times it turns into a he said, she said sort of situation.
No, forget about the problem. Again, I repeat, I'm not discussing any specific case.
I'm not discussing any particular cases either. I'm just saying, unless there's clear-cut evidence that the officer in question, and I'm not discussing any particular case here either, did something wrong, unless there's clearly presented evidence, it turns into a he said, she said. And nobody gets anywhere.
Forget the he said, she said. Because you're not answering my question. The question that I'm asking is, if clearly, and I say clearly, mm-hmm. two police officers have a citizen under control, subdued, maybe even, let's say, even handcuffed, all right? And a third officer knowingly, under those circumstances, continues to kick and abuse the person. I'm trying to establish something here. Because this is why you're exemplifying and showing why there's never a resolution to one of these things. Okay, it's established. I'm telling you, in this case that I'm discussing, there's proof that two officers subdue a guy. There's proof that the two officers subdue the guy, have him handcuffed, and a third officer. It appears by looking at the evidence, by looking at video evidence or any other kind of evidence.
Yeah.
And he continues to kick this subdued person, citizen, arrested or otherwise, regardless, and clearly is abusing this person and taking advantage of the fact that they can't defend themselves, which is basically what subduing means, doesn't it? Right? They can't take offense or defense. Being subdued means you cannot take any action whatsoever. I want to make that clear. The individual cannot take any action of any kind of forceful action or hurtful action on their part towards another individual or a police officer.
Okay.
And that individual in a subdued moment is being kicked and hit, and it's clear that that's the case.
Yeah.
Should that be something that a police officer should they be questioned about that?
Hell yes.
Action. Okay.
Yeah.
And should that police officer explain his action?
Yes.
To the public. And if those actions are determined to be illegal, should the legal system charge that police officer with a crime of whatever that crime is?
I'm not 100% sure, Frank. I mean, I don't know if he should have to explain himself to the public. I think he should at least have to explain himself to a board of inquiry.
I think he should have to explain himself the same way another individual who commits the same questionable act that may be criminal in act, maybe criminal in fact, that a criminal has to answer for his crime, right?
Yeah.
It's not a crime until he's charged, right? You have to charge a criminal before it's a crime.
Yeah.
So you're charging someone with the accusation of committing a crime. That's what the legal system's for, to determine whether it's a crime, correct?
Okay.
Shouldn't the police be going through the same thing? Why do we need the SIU? Why is the SIU necessary, Aaron, to have an organization such as the SIU to do what the law should be doing in the event that, in the case that a police officer shoots an unarmed person or an armed person or a person, whatever, shouldn't the legal system be handling that? I'm asking a rhetorical question, I have to admit. The reason, I'll give you the answer. The reason is that the police don't necessarily cooperate with the law. because they have a right to defend themselves against the law. The same law they enforce is the law they can ignore and they can attempt to ignore. Isn't that true?
It can be perceived that way, yes.
Isn't that why
and
the SIU
oftentimes,
was born?
Oftentimes it is.
isn't that why the SIU was born? Isn't it why it was born? It was born because, let's not forget, the SIU came into existence because police officers were getting away with stuff they shouldn't have gotten away with.
Yeah, the SIU is basically the police. They're supposed to be able to police the police.
So the question I have, before I create enemies of all the policemen in the world, don't the good police officers want the bad ones out?
You'd think that, but because the police are, technically speaking, a paramilitary organization, there's that feeling of brotherhood, and that can make things difficult.
And that's why you need the SIU.
Mm-hmm. But you need an SIU that can actually take effective action. The SIU, as it currently stands, seems toothless.
Well, only because they're not getting the respect from the police force they deserve. And they're acting like if the SIU is getting carried away with their actions and or their questions, I'm sure there's a way for the police to establish that.
Mm-hmm.
And if the police aren't responding to the SIU in a manner that, you know, one would expect they should, there should be an action the SIU can take. Fair?
Yeah, definitely. It seems eminently fair.
So all I'm saying is, because I'm not here to make enemies of the police, and I'm not here to make enemies of the SIU. I'm here to make enemies of people who abuse the law. And in my opinion, from time to time, every citizen who crosses the line and breaks the law, society has a right to charge them and to bring them to justice. Who they are, what they are, and where they work shouldn't cause them to be more protected than anyone else. And that's the problem. And that, if this is my opinion on this whole thing, is that the police should be accountable just like everybody else. And unfortunately, they can't be accountable like everybody else because they're part of the law. They're part of the legal system. You know? So, yeah, mm-hmm. That's why the SIU was born. The SIU was born, hopefully, to prevent incidents such as the ones we've heard about that sound like they don't need to happen, that it would be nice to know they're not going to happen again, out of respect for the families of these people who may or may not have deserved to die or deserve to have been pulled over or deserve to have been given tickets that they shouldn't have been given or deserved of a beating they didn't deserve. That's it. That's all. That's my opinion, is that you can't break the law no matter who you are. And if any segment of society is allowed to break the law, like we've discussed the senators who have, you know, who have illegally included deductions and write-offs they shouldn't have, they should be brought in front of the powers that be to make sure that they're doing what they're doing according to the law. Is that not right?
Because that is most eminently fair.
Right, that's all. And I'm a corny guy. I'm a corny guy. I believe in justice. I believe in justice. Canada's a just country. So let's make sure that some of the people who are abusing the system that we have and the great country that we are, who are abusing it, you know, like the same people who are testing Aboriginal people, you know, they're treating them like guinea pigs. Come on, man. It happens. We have to fix it. You know, society has to fix it. When there's a wrong being done by a group that for the most part we fear, we have to figure out how not to be fearful of them, because that's what we're talking about here. A lot of the action that isn't taken against the police is based on fear. That's it. Plain and simple. Intimidation on the police's part. You know, it's not right. It's not right. And I've seen it firsthand. I was an 8-year-old. I was introduced to a nightstick at 8 years old. Do you know why, Aaron?
No, why was that, Frank?
Because I'm Italian, and we love soccer, and we're at Earls Court Park watching a soccer game. We stop, we go to the Paloma, my parents, my dad, I should say, and my uncles and friends buy a coffee, and they stand outside having the coffee. And because they were standing outside, it meant the police were entitled to yield billy clubs at them. And one of them hit an 8-year-old. You know who that 8-year-old was?
That was you.
And I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that. Because we were Italian, we were being discriminated against. Trust me, discrimination exists in this country. Still does. Still does. And it's not right. And it should be. It should be eradicated wherever it's found. Now, why am I going on this kick talking about this? And we'll talk about that as well. Next, I guess, or after. Martin Luther King, 50 years ago this week. If you know what? Let me allow you to conclude the subject we just spoke about and let you have the last word on police. And should they... How can we ensure that the good police are treated with the respect they deserve and are honored in a manner that they deserve and held to the highest degree of pride by us as citizens, the wonderful policemen that we have that believe the oath means something? And how do we take care of the ones who think, for whatever reason, or make the mistake of taking that power and abusing it? How do we make sure those officers understand that they're not allowed to do it? And how do we ensure that they're punished appropriately based on that abuse? So I'll give you the last word.
Well, I think a lot of the issues that folks have is with the fact that a lot of the police perceive themselves to be above the laws that they enforce. And
but don't talk about that. Give me your opinion. Forget about everybody else, Aaron. To make the world a better place, what can we do? What can we do? What can we expect? Now, never mind. Don't bring other people into it. Just your opinion. I don't want to hear what other people think. I've heard what other people think, and some of them
okay.
make me sick. You know, on both sides, I'm talking about. You know what I mean? Like the idiots that think no matter what the police do, it's wrong, and then the other idiots on the opposite side of the equation, no matter what the police do, it's always right. You know, somewhere I know you're not on either end of that equation, or are you?
No, I'm not one of those individuals that believe that the police are squeaky clean and everything they do is right and justified. I'm also not one of those people that hate police. I have a very
right.
strong and healthy respect for police. But you know, you are right in that there has to be some way of overseeing them, for lack of a better term, and making sure that they obey the same laws that they are paid to enforce. And when that breaks
right.
down, that's when you get into a lot of serious and heavy issues. A civilian oversight board has proven to be ineffective in the past because they don't hold the same powers. The SIU is a good start, but again, the public perception of the SIU is that they're mostly toothless and they act as a rubber stamp for police action.
Is that again,
because,
Aaron?
Yeah.
I hate to nag you. I hate to nag you about this. I understand that. There are people who think that they're not that they're toothless. Do you
and
think
I'm,
that? They're...
And I'm one of them, Frank. Which is why I keep mentioning
okay.
it. If I didn't frickin'
oh, okay,
think,
okay,
I wouldn't mention it.
Okay, good. No.
All right.
In my opinion.
Let me restate
in my opinion,
that. In my opinion, the SIU is frickin' toothless.
Okay.
All right.
That's what I wanted to hear. That's what I.
You're going to bring out the Scott gang for me shortly, Frank. I'm going to be taking you on a rowboat ride in a lock soon.
No, you won't. You like me too much. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
But and again, like I said, I'm one of those people that actually believe that while the SIU is a good idea and a good start, for the most part, it is actually rendered toothless by the thin blue line. That's something that needs to be rectified. That's something that needs to be changed. I have a friend that lives in this building who's going to be an MP. And when I say MP, I don't mean member of Parliament. I mean he's shipping off to be a military policeman.
Yep.
So, you know, I understand he worked as a bylaw officer in Mississauga as well, and it was very tempting to go to him if I had any issues that I wanted corrected. But I wouldn't have felt comfortable if I'd found a policeman misbehaving approaching him about it. And again, it's the whole perception of the thin blue line and you know, what power as an individual I have to correct any wrongdoing that I see in the police force. And that's an issue that needs to be addressed, but it needs to be addressed by something with teeth. And the SIU can gum and rubber stamp police shootings to death. It's just not a bad choice of words. I apologize, but it doesn't help the situation. The problem is that the police are, unfortunately, right now, they're fighting an uphill battle because of the way a lot of people, myself included, feel about them. And that's unfortunate because it keeps them from doing the job, and at the same time can act as kind of a gateway for those officers that do break the law to continue to break the law.
Exactly, exactly. So if I can add my spin to what I think I heard, what you're saying, and I concur with it 100% if this is what you're saying, respect of the police can be self-destroyed by the police, in turn making their job even more difficult, in the same way that policemen who respect the law, regardless of who's breaking it, and by that you know what I'm saying, and I won't infer, the police who respect the laws that other policemen are breaking, like the female police officer, what was that case, the police officer that followed another cop, my goodness, I think they were speeding, and the cop finally, she caught up to him, went through a couple of jurisdictions, and by that I mean, you know, Metro, you know, then went all the way to Ajax, and the cop was speeding, and she got in trouble because she tried giving this officer a speeding ticket.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that case.
Remember that? That's not right. That like for her to be the one, and maybe I shouldn't say her. Let's take it out of the sexual realm. For that police officer,
that officer,
I'm not saying should have been a hero, but that officer should have just been allowed to do their job. The person who broke the law should have been forced to be, you know, punished the same way anybody who breaks that same law, and we move on. But when we hear things like that, I'm trying to give an example of what you're saying. Because of that, how can we respect the police?
Exactly. The police are the only ones that can cut off their own noses to spite their faces.
Well, exactly. So I want to respect the police because for me, and this is my opinion, only my opinion, for me to respect the police, they have to be respectable. And if
I agree with that 100%.
Right? If they're not respectable, then how can I respect them? That is the problem. And when the police figure that out as a whole and sit there and say to themselves, I should be a decent human being. I'm not talking just about a police officer here now. I should be a decent human being and understand that for me, to talk the talk, I have to walk the talk. And until that happens, the respect of the police will not exist. Every time a cop pulls somebody out of a car because they don't look like a person who should be living in that neighborhood, every time that happens, a little less respect is given to the other police officer. And that's what I dislike. I dislike knowing that police officers can be disrespected, because I happen to think it is one of the most honorable professions that we have, along with doctors, you know, lawyers.
I was going to say, Frank, if you say lawyers, I'm hanging up.
No, don't hang up. But I think you know what I'm saying. All right?
I do understand.
Listen,
what you're saying.
When it comes to lawyers, let's be clear about this, because I don't want to expand the topic here to lawyers. Lawyers have a job to do. As long as they do it legally, who the hell cares? Do you understand what I'm saying? I may not like what they're doing, but if they're following the law, yet that's what the law is all about. You know, the law has two sides. You know, the accused, you know, the defendant, and then of course the government, which is seeking to prove the defendant did something wrong. You know, They're on. Of course, we're not all going to agree with every lawyer, because lawyers are supposed to take one side of the fence. They're not there to be judges. That's what the judges are for. But to me, that's in my heart. If there's anything I could do in life to help my children's beautiful country of Canada, the one that I brought my kids into the world to live in, is that we have a fair and just society. And I'm not talking about, you know, the cartoon version with, you know, rainbows and you know, sugar plums. I'm talking about a truly fair and just society, which only determines, you know, laws and rules on right and wrong, not who you are or where you've been or where you live. You know what I mean?
Yes,
so,
sir.
There you go. I've said my piece, and I think you and I are on the same page in that. Just that you and I are on the same page. Just you're a little tougher guy about it. Well, you know what? It's nice to agree with you anyway. Okay, so the Toronto police situation can be solved with an SIU that has the power to do the right thing. We can agree on that, right?
Most definitely. They just got to have balls.
Okay. That's okay. Well, they don't have to. They can have another. They can have another form
what I mean.
Of genitalia. There are other forms of genitalia. They should have genitalia. They shouldn't be neutered, I think, is what you're trying to say.
That's the perfect word for it. They shouldn't be neutered.
There you go. I told you we agree with each other. Okay.
Yep.
Staying in the in kind of the. That I brought in politics for a little bit. This week, funny story this week. This week we have all the heads of state, at least from an Ontario perspective, a Toronto perspective, and a federal perspective.
Oh, the Premier of Nova Scotia joined in.
Did he chime in too?
Yeah, he chimed in too. Yeah.
Did he bring out his bong? That's funny stuff. You know, that truly is funny stuff. Weed in politics. Who, you know, how many times have you ever heard a politician talk and you've asked yourself, is that guy smoking crack or weed? You know,
was just about to say, I've thought to myself so many times, oh my God, what is he smoking?
Well,
the case
what?
Bob Ford, apparently a lot of pot. And I hate to say it, make a generalization, but it shows, because bro looks like he has had the munchies for decades.
Well, he's got that red face look going on, like he's been holding his breath a little too long. He's talked a few times in his life.
I'll be honest with you. When it comes to smoking pot and politics, the most you're going to get out of me is a so what. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. You know, if Trudeau wants to have a puff while he's sitting around his pool with his buddies and the kids are not in the house, why not? More power to him, you know. His father, Pierre, said, you know what, the government has no place in the bedrooms of the nation. I don't think they should be looking over the fence either to see what I'm doing in my backyard. There are those that are going to argue that Trudeau broke the law, specifically when it comes to possession, because he had to possess the joint in order to smoke it. Peter McKay said this. He's already been called to task by a law professor. And McKay used to be a lawyer. That makes it even funnier. The fact that Rob Ford confessed, kind of figured something was going on. I mean, his sister was dating a drug dealer at one point. True, this dude actually busted into the Ford family house demanding money. It's documented. The police are on record.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so, if Kathleen Wynne last smoked pot 35 years ago, cool.
Well, she was doing some math. She was saying, you know, well, the point she was trying to make was, I never smoked near my children because I didn't have any.
And that works. Stephen Harper's excuse for never smoking pot is that he has asthma. However, this is interesting.
I question whether he even has a heart.
Well, it's not that. It's that marijuana acts as a vasodilator, which means it actually helps individuals with asthma. So the fact that he didn't smoke because he's got asthma, he's trying to be Mr. Sanctimonious, a little holier than thou.
Are you suggesting that our prime minister might not have the facts straight?
I am very strongly suggesting that he might not have all of his facts.
There you go. But, you know, I think I agree with you where he basically said what he said, it was a way of sidestepping the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And what you just brought up proves it, I guess.
Well, I mean, there are studies out there that, I mean, you're going to find a whole bunch of conflicting evidence when it comes to cannabis and when it comes to tetrahydrocannabinol. You're going to find all sorts of interesting theories. It does help with appetite. However, just like smoking, yes, it is possible for you to damage your lungs through long-term exposure. However, to date, I have not seen anything where an individual has died from overdosing on weed. I can't recall the last time somebody crashed a car because they were stoned. If anything, smoking simply makes you drive slower.
Hang on a second. You can't crash a car on weed. You can't go fast enough to crash.
There you go. See? My point. I mean, when you really think, people say weed's a gateway drug. It's going to lead you to cocaine and crack, and it's just as bad as those drugs. When you really think about it, you know what? You would rape and kill for another fix while you're on cocaine. What's the worst thing that's happened on weed? Dude, you stole my Doritos. That's pretty much it.
The worst thing that happens for the people who are on weed is they can't remember. So there's no.
Oh, you know what? I used to have a roommate that was a Rastafarian in university.
Oh,
when he was sober, oh, forget it. You know, when he wasn't high, forget it. You got him stoned, and oh my God, he was a whiz with electronics. Dude was absolutely amazing.
We're
now,
just,
I'm going to put something out here for you, Frank. Bear with me just for a second on this one. I honestly think that the Canadian government should really consider legalizing and regulating marijuana, and I'm going to tell you why. You're going to have three separate revenue streams when it comes to marijuana. If you regulate the industry, not only are you going to be able to put drug dealers out of business by undercutting them on prices, but you've got, like I said before, you've got three distinct revenue streams. You've got producers and manufacturers, you've got vendors, and you've got consumers. There's three levels of taxation there. With the number of people I know that smoke pot, if the government legalizes it and starts selling it, you'd wipe out the national deficit in a month. You really would.
Well, you know, my view on legalizing pot, don't have one. And I know a lot about it. I'm going to be 60 next year, so, you know, I'm one of the yuppies. And us yuppies, the 60s, I mean, weed was everywhere. I mean, everywhere. I'm sure it's still everywhere, but it used to be everywhere when I was 16 and 15 and 14. And I really don't have a position as far as legalizing it is concerned. I wouldn't legalize it just because it might bring some more money into the coffers. I would legalize it if I truly believed it was in the best interest of society overall, whether you want to consider the money that could be garnered through taxation, controlling who sells the substance, putting criminals out of business. You know, these are all wonderful reasons to legalize it, in my opinion. And that's only my opinion, but it's something that we as a society need to, like in the U.S., they have their plebiscites. We can have a plebiscite here. We can, we can say, hey, let's make it legal and ask it to be on a voting list somewhere. And then it can become legal if the majority of, the voting public decides it's a good idea. I'm just on the fence when it comes to whether you want to legalize it or not. I'm not sure that the good outweighs the bad. I'm not sure that, I'm not sure about that, Aaron. And that's just, again, my opinion.
No, and I respect that opinion, Frank. because, you know,
it.
I mean,
I just don't know.
I'm not a hippy-dippy by any stretch of the imagination. I don't imagine anyone would ever consider me to be one of those types. But when you really consider it, and looking at, for example, the states, the majority, okay, I shouldn't say the majority. I don't have all the facts and figures right at my fingertips here, folks, so bear with me. But a lot of the people that are in jail are there on marijuana abuse. It's not really a crime. I don't remember the last time I heard about somebody stoned on pot going in and robbing a store. I don't honestly remember anything like that. You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's a recreational herb. It can be used responsibly by people as such. So, you know, if you really are that desperate to criminalize it because you fell for reefer madness, then all right, you know, it's your opinion. I'll respect that, but don't necessarily expect me to agree with you.
Okay, you're listening to Candid Frank Live free-for-all version on Friday. We will talk about the Thai Cats, but we can wait a little later to talk about them. And the reason for that is that they're playing in BC, and maybe I'll take a look at the score and we'll talk about where they're at and about how they're doing. I know Jarrett Harris and company have to be very happy with the turn of events there. We'll talk about them at the end of the program. And the show started late today because of Blog Talk Radio. Couldn't get in. And I don't know why, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, we started the show at 10:30 tonight. So we'll be going to 12:30 for the balance of the show. So we've got a lot of time left in the program. It is coming up to 11:30. We're going to take a short break. We'll play some music. And, of course, I have to admit, it's going to be shameless. Yes, the Argo fan in me is going to come out. And we'll have to play Mike Richards. What do you think? You think we should play Mike Richards?
I definitely think we should play Mike Richards.
Okay, let's take a short break. We've been on for almost half an hour. And we'll be back. And when we come back, we talked about the Toronto Police Force and the relationship they have with the SIU. Aaron and I both agree that if the police do something wrong, there has to be somebody who can take the police to task and ensure that they're following the same laws that they're enforcing. We discussed weed and politics, and the weed and politics issue is very simple. If it's a good idea, something that the general public feels is a good idea, they should be given the opportunity to vote yay or nay to the legalizing of pot. And if that happens, then we'll see how it works out. Some, like Aaron, think that there's an upside to it financially, at three levels, in fact, he says. I, on the other hand, sit on the fence on whether it would be good or bad for society. So when we come back, we're going to move on to... You're going to wish we had some weed here, Aaron. We're going to talk about Miley Cyrus when we come back.
Oh, God. I'll get the beer.
I'm just a regular Joe with a regular job. I'm your average white Leaside like snob. I like porno and Proline and books about porn. I got an average house with nice hardwood floors. My wife, my job, my kids and my car. My feet on my table and a Cuban cigar. But sometimes that just ain't enough to keep a man like me interested. No way. Now I gotta wear double blue and hit the subway downtown. Yeah, 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 yeah. I need football big on a really big field. No silicone cheerleaders. I want my chicks real. I'm an Argo. I fly to BC and hide all their weed. I go to Regina and say, how about that wheat? I'm an Argo. I'm an Argo. I pocket Commonwealth and take Edmonton spaces while Edmonton people make Edmonton faces. I'm an Argo.
He's an Argo.
I'm an Argo.
I'm gonna do. I'm gonna get myself one of those Condridge Holloway mesh jerseys circa 1982 with the midriff showing, just like those skanky Queen Street Lady Gaga wannabes, and walk right into Harbor 60, and there's nothing nobody can do about it. Yeah! And I'm gonna talk about the Argos on the radio anytime I want, because unlike that 60-year-old from The Fan who wears sunglasses on TV, I actually go to the games. Okay! They can take their 20 years of boring people with their Dungeons & Dragons staff and have a great big 20-year-old cakewalk right in the middle of Yonge Street, and it won't make a lick of difference. You know why? Because we got the bombs. Yeah! We got Schultz, Dennegan, frickin' Naylor, and frickin' Randorf. I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna get Bill Simons, Joel Kroll, Terry Greer, and frickin' Don Mohn, and a giant case of Crown Royal, and we're gonna go right down.
Hey, you know what, pal? You really are an Argo.
Just shut up and sing the song, pal. I'm an Argo!
He's an Argo! I'm an Argo!
He's an Argo!
He's an Argo!
I'm an Argo, and I'm proud of it.
The grand line, the whisper, the hollow stretch, the keel, the reed, the mark, the squeezing sound, the reed, the mark, the squeezing sound.
Okay, Aaron, enough with the music. I control the music, not you.
Frank, what's up?
I heard what you were playing. That was good. So, I said we were going to talk about Miley Cyrus next.
Yeah.
Did you have occasion to watch the VMAs?
As a general rule, I don't watch VMAs. I try to avoid most awards shows, with the exception of perhaps the Oscars. I don't know why, it's just the way things work, but I have, through various sources, seen most of her, I know you can't see this, but I'm making finger quotes right now, performance.
I had the good fortune of watching her new video today by accident, and it fit right in with her, and I'm doing the air quotes now, performance on the VMA. You know, a girl with that figure, first of all, Miley, you don't have the figure to do that stuff, first of all. You need to gain some weight, and, you know, you need, if you're going to throw around some flesh, have some, first of all. I'm being mean now. And the reason I'm being mean is because what she's doing is just so ludicrous. Such an obvious grab for attention. Even mentioning, if you heard her promoting her act, her performance before the show, she said, and she talked about how she was going to follow the same path that Madonna went on, and then of course Blondie from the other Blondie from Disney. Who now has straightened her life out a little bit.
Who, Britney?
You know. Yeah.
Christina?
Yeah, no, Britney. And, you know, and then Britney. No, no, Britney kissed Madonna on one of the award shows.
Oh, yeah, well, ooh.
Right? So,
ooh.
So she said, I'm going to do something even better. And all I saw less talent, more trying to be a really bad stripper.
Okay, here's what drives me absolutely nuts about stuff like this, Frank, and you'll have to bear with me. People like seeing girls shaking their butts, flashing their skin, all that sort of fun stuff in videos. All that rap video sucks, not enough titties. oh, that rap video sucks, not enough ass. So when somebody goes out and actually does it, oh my God, they're all telling me what happened to Miley Cyrus. It's hypocritical. It's extremely hypocritical of people to get so upset at her for giving people what they want. I'm sick and tired of guys sitting going, oh, no, I don't agree with her performance at all. Personally, I thought it was disgusting. You know, and in the meantime, in the back of their heads, they're thinking, you know what, I'm going to go crank one out in a sock to this later. Just the sheer hypocrisy of it all just astounds me.
Well, let me assure you there's no hypocrisy in me. There ain't no dangers to any socks because of her for me, let me tell you. I mean,
you know
there
who
ain't
else deserves
no
blame for that? Robin Thicke.
Who else? Oh, geez.
Yeah. No, I said it. For actually participating in that.
No, not only that.
He's just as bad as everybody else, because I guarantee you there's horny teenagers out there that would have loved to have been up on stage with Miley.
Yeah, no,
so,
no. Hey, listen, don't get me wrong.
But I mean,
you know,
if they're trying to shame her for doing something that they all want to see in their music videos anyways, is a little bit hypocritical.
Well, I'm not. I don't care what they say or think. I just happen to think that it was. It wasn't. It isn't that what she did was what she tried to do. It's not what she tried to do. Aaron, you're misunderstanding me. I'm critical of the way she did it. It was a piss poor example of that kind of stuff. She was horrible at it. She was downright horrible. She was,
you know what? She can't work.
You know, she can't work it. She was as unsexy. She was as unsexy as unsexy gets. And I happen to believe even if I was 18, I'd have considered what she did unsexy. Because it was not done well. You know, she just looked like a train wreck to me. It looked like a train wreck. There was no talent in what she was doing. I mean, I've thrown some dollar bills back in the day at much better strippers than her. You know?
Is your wife listening to this show, Frank?
What?
Is your wife listening to this show?
Nah, she's asleep. And she won't hear it on the replay. And come to think of it, she is asleep because she didn't even answer what I just said. Oh yeah, she's out cold. All right. So now we can talk. You won't be hearing her opinion, I'll tell you that. Coming through me either. No, it was a poor rendition of a stripper that was displayed by Miley Cyrus. I was very disappointed. You know, the doggy ears?
Yeah, I didn't that get looked, her trying to appeal looked, to the furry demographic. That was just beyond me.
That has to go. And the lipstick that looks like an 80-year-old put on her. I mean, come on, Miley. You know, you got a lot of money, but you know what? You can't do anything. There is a limit to what you can do. Work a little bit. Work, you know, if you want to do that kind of thing, give it some effort, you know, some practice, you know. For as bad as Michael Jackson was, treated by people, when he did what he did it right, and he did it well. You know,
no, Michael was a hell of a performer.
Exactly. So you may not have liked him, may not have liked him personally, but when he went out on stage, he was doing something that he worked on. You know, and if anything, that was the biggest crime that he committed, that he really cared about what he did. Miley just showed us that she just cared about what people thought, what people think. You know, there's talent that tries to get a reaction out of you, that, you know, that tries to make you think. And then there's just, talent that's used only to, get a reaction, any reaction. And hopefully the most reaction you possibly get without any meat behind it, if you follow what I'm saying. So, yeah, I was very disappointed.
She would say she was a hot mess.
Yeah, she was a hot mess. So enough about Miley. I hope her dad's enjoying her career move. I hope her dad's enjoying her career move.
You know what? Honestly, I really feel sorry for Billy Ray. I really actually did enjoy his performances in the TV show Doc, which they shot here in Toronto. I actually thought Breaks wasn't that bad. Of course, I was 17 at the time, so, you know.
Well, apparently
Apparently
his daughter's not business in the front, not business in the back. She's business nowhere. There's no business in her hair. Yeah, you know what? I like him too. And you know what? Because I had young girls, I spent the past few years raising daughters, and they all enjoyed the Miley Cyrus show. You know,
Hannah Montana.
Called, but her dad, Hannah Montana. Thank you. And you know, her dad was in it, and you know, it was an okay show. It was what she was. It was good for those that you know, that are her age. I just happen to think that you know, while she grew up with other kids her age watching her, I think she went fast forward to, you know, I joked about her lipstick looked like that of a 60-year-old, put it on. But I happen to think also she was acting a lot like a talent whose career is over and they're trying to fire it back up again. And
you mean
they go way
trying
past
to stay relevant?
Exactly. And that's and thank you for saying that, because that's what it looked like, even in the way she danced, even the way she looked. And it seemed like she wasn't dancing. She was desperately looking for attention, in my opinion. And it came through the way she was dancing. There was no rhyme or reason to what she was doing. You know, just look at me. I'm almost naked and I can bump up and rub against somebody. And her new song basically says that. It's my house. I can do what I want. Wang. But, you know, Miley, I hope you grow up a little quicker now. I mean, you're going through a phase. Let's hope it doesn't last for very long.
Well,
now, we're not going to get into
this. Turns out for her, she's doing a masterful job of manipulating her own image. So, hey, more power to her.
Now, important to me growing up, one of the most, you know, there were three people growing up that are of my era. Being born in 1954, the presidency of John F. Kennedy in the early 60s, 60 to 63, I was 6 through 9, so I understood who he was. Went to Catholic school, first Catholic president. His brother in 68, his brother in 68 was killed. So needless to say, I was 14 at that time, so I did understand what was going on. And a couple of years before that, when I was somewhere between 10 and 12, maybe 13, Martin Luther King, one of the greatest men ever to be a leader of men, to never have held political office. Martin Luther King was a brilliant man who I believe, and will to my dying breath, believe he is the best inspiration I ever had in my life. There's nobody, I explained to you about a situation that happened to me at 8 years old. So needless to say, Martin Luther King meant a lot to me because I was being discriminated against, being made fun of by other children, because I was a WOP. And, you know, they called us, you know, DP, displaced person. And Martin Luther King came in at my young age knowing that the police didn't like me because I was Italian, knowing that it's quite possible that someone can have a dream. And that dream, to fast forward, all the presidents that have been president that admired this man. And Obama was very funny in what he said. I don't know if you saw what he said talking about Martin Luther King. And he actually is living the dream being president. So, you know, I'm sure Martin Luther King would have been very proud the day that Obama was elected, regardless of his political aspirations and or actions. I don't know that they would have agreed on what Obama's done, but he would have been proud of the fact that, you know, a black man is president. something that in his time when he was marching to Washington, nobody actually thought was possible. Do you have any, you're much younger than I am, so your recollections are more or less going to be historical. But still, I ask you, your reflections on Martin Luther King.
Well, you know, the name that was mostly confined to the history books, and growing up in Canada, Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement in the 1960s wasn't something that was really focused on in school, because we didn't seem to have in Canada, we didn't seem to have the same issues that the States did. You know, so for the most part, he was someone that was codified in the back of a history text, and it was nice to know, but it wasn't anything that was vital or important because those sort of concerns seemed secondary, you know, growing up in Toronto and growing up in Canada. You'd certainly have to respect the individual. You have to respect his accomplishments, his drive, his determination. I mean, the man is an inspirational figure. Regardless of the circumstances surrounding his passing, regardless of the actual historical situation in the States, just the man's drive and determination alone are something that could serve to inspire generations of young people if they would take the time to read about him. It's actually something that I kind of regret that my school didn't actually delve into more. I would have loved to have learned more about the civil rights movement in the States in the 50s and 60s. You know, I mean, as it is, there are certain touchstones. Everybody has heard of I Have a Dream. Everybody knows that. Well, everybody knows at least that line from the speech. Very few people remember his Sermon on the Mount speech, which was actually more important and actually slightly more prophetic to a certain extent. But the March on Washington, the peaceful March on Washington, is definitely a watershed moment in American civil rights history and something that should be remembered and commemorated every year, and I'm glad it is. I'm glad to see that America has slightly matured as a nation. I'm glad to see that they have a black president, which is awesome. But what actually kind of scares me the most about Barack Obama is the fact that he's half white.
You can't be perfect, buddy.
No. Because who got America into the mess they're in? Mostly white guys. So, you know, that kind of worries me a bit. But you know what? It's definitely a great thing that he has become president of the United States. It is an example of someone actually being able to live out the American dream. I think that's awesome. It's one of my favorite words. I apologize. It's something that should never, ever be forgotten.
You have a question for somebody who lived through his era? Is there a question you have that maybe the books might not be able to answer, but a person like me who actually lived through that time?
Did you think it would actually work? That, I think, would have been the major question. When you look at the size of government and the way that some governments behave, the people that were protesting at the time and the people that lived through their era, did you think the protests would actually work, and did you think anything would actually get done? That's, you know.
I believed in his dream, and the reason I believed in it is that what makes his message so powerful is the fact that he did what people don't do often. And the irony here is, I'm not trying to be funny, he did walk the walk. And when you consider the fact that he literally walked the walk and brought all the people who agreed with him and showed that they could peacefully demonstrate, this is the sadness I have about our country, where peaceful demonstration is illegal. And that scares me. That's a police state in action. Do I think that if people are allowed to voice their opinion with their feet, with their vote, with their compassion, and with their peaceful attitude? Yeah, anything's possible, Aaron. But the powers that be will take away those tools as quickly as they become effective. And Martin Luther King died long before he had a chance to do the amount of work he could have done. So am I surprised by what happened and how we've moved ahead? No. We've moved ahead slower than we should have because of the death of Martin Luther King, because of the death of John F. Kennedy, and the death of Robert F. Kennedy. These were people who had power and wanted to use it for people who were less fortunate and had less power. None of these men were perfect. God knows none of them were perfect. But when it mattered and when they needed to do what needed to be done for the good of everyone, they were there and they delivered. And that's why I believe I'm not surprised by the progress made mainly due to them and the lack of progress made mainly due to the people who killed them.
Cool.
Does that answer your question?
I definitely think it does, yes.
Okay, so Martin Luther King, I thank you, and I say a prayer for you. Actually, I say a prayer to you. You are one of the people that I pray to and hope whose light that shines in the sky, I know it does. And the fervor of peace and justice without violence, with just speaking, with just making a point, wanting to be heard, may that light shine forever. That's a light that I don't think should ever fade. And I think we all, those of us that remember him personally because we were around when he was around, those like you who've read some of the stuff he's done, this is a person who should be celebrated. He was a great man, not because of the color of his skin, not in spite of the color of his skin, but because of the, as he put it, his character. It's a man's character that matters, and he had lots and lots and lots of character. Thank you, Martin Luther King, for what you've done. Many of you are lucky, and not only black folks. He was, if I can add this, their approach, Martin Luther King's approach, spawned and really did help kickstart the women's movement. And it's not, I'm not saying this as a joke. It was part of, it basically, you know, it was like rolling out the next thing that should roll out. Now that Martin Luther King did this, we can do this. Women figured, hey, we can do the same thing. So yeah, protesting and marching was a big deal because of Martin Luther King. And, you know, women running around without bras, you know, that was the big thing. You know, he had a dream, and the women wanted freedom, and that was the whole point of not wearing a bra at that time, was, in a sense, that was to show freedom that they wanted and wanted their freedom. So yeah, Martin Luther King, it's all, you know, one of the greatest men in my life, you know, right up there with Muhammad Ali, you know, Pope John Paul. A lot, you know, the Kennedys, a lot of great people that actually cared about others, and I think died because they did.
Now, I flipped you a couple links on Facebook there, Frank, so if you check your messages, you'll find something that might be interesting to you.
Would that be on a Martin
Luther
King
Facebook
thing?
Yeah, it would be on Martin Luther King, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I see him. I got him.
Okay. Take a look when you have the chance.
Yeah. Right now I'm busy. Oh, okay. You know that. All right. Yeah, so that was the subject I wanted to touch on, Martin Luther King. And now we can start moving towards the reason we exist and the reason we have this time on this show. You know, I got a new lawyer. I don't know if I even should say this. I'm in the middle of a court case. You know what? No, I won't. I won't talk about
probably
this.
Probably not.
We'll leave this one out.
This
we'll leave this one out.
Reporting on cases in progress, Frank. You don't think you should talk about your court case. Please probably shouldn't talk about cases they're working on.
Yeah. Oh, now you're being... Not that.
Yeah.
It's not...
Yeah.
But, okay. All right. Well, then... never mind. And don't forget, both parties are privy to what's going on, okay? So it's not a unilateral thing, right? Okay, so, you know, the reason we exist is because of sports. We only have 34 minutes left. We're going to take another break. You're listening to Candid Frank Live with Aaron William Freeland, and it's, of course, Candid Frank Live Free for All Friday. I promised at the end of the show we'd be talking about the Tie Cats, and I got a couple more things I want to get in, but we should, well, you know what? I'm gonna play a Tie Cat thing. I might as well, for goodness sake. It's Tie Cat night, right? I keep saying Tie Cat night. And then we never really talk about the Tie Cats, which is horrible. But here's a 3-minute break for with the Tie Cats. Okay, guys, we'll be back and we'll quickly talk about a couple of other subjects, and then we'll talk about the Hamilton Tiger Cats after this. 3-minute break. You're listening to Candid Frank Live once again with Aaron William Freeland and Frank Stanishi. Hope you're enjoying the program. We started at 10:30 tonight, so we're going till 12:30. See you on the other side of this little Tie Cat thingy.
Arlen Bruce, perception left and right. He's gonna catch the ball if it's anywhere in sight. Put the style up, clutch S&B, surpass 1,000 yards. Grand Prix, don't forget about Mark Way, Carter 2. One hand, Maurice Mann. Cat defense, man, don't know what to do. Throw it up, take it away, run, we got it too. No pin, defensive MVP, got jockey too. What the hell you gonna do? Easy bag, just gotta stay away. McKean Bradley, turn around and run away. Bo Smith, where the hell you gonna throw? Look back, see us dancing in your end zone. Not, they don't stand a chance. Blue Bombers, screw that, man. Alouettes, they think they're big. Coming home with the ring. It's Tiger time, get out the way. Going hard, every day. Fuck the Argos, the Alouettes. It's Tiger Town, we the best.
There you go. A little Tie Cat tune. Okay, we're down to the final half hour, Aaron. We're going to move real quick on these sports issues that I want to talk about.
Okay.
Really quick. The Canadian Hockey Olympic team.
Yes.
Man. What do you think? Is it time to worry about picking the team?
Well, I think they started the pre-selection training camp right now. So, getting all the players in and getting them some ice time during the summer before NHL practices and preseason starts is a good thing. It can also serve as a bit of a tune-up for the regular season. For the most part, I think, though, the players will look on this as a good thing, a chance to break the ice and get to know who they might be playing with. How many players did they invite, Frank? Do you remember? 40-odd?
43, I think.
Okay, So, I mean, they're going to have that whittled down by the end of the, by the end of the day, so.
Well, don't forget, these are just the 43. They think they can pick the 20, whatever it is, out of the 43. And it ain't the final, you know, it isn't, these aren't the only players. They don't have to announce their team until December, which is before the February Olympics. So there's a whole half of season that players have that they can impress upon the management, including Steve Yzerman, Tampa Bay GM, that they belong on the team. Here's what I'm going to say, where we sit right now. Right now it doesn't look like Canada has a very strong back end. They have a lot of talent up front, and that is in the forwards. But in the defense, they don't have too much experience back there. Yep, they got guys that have won the Stanley Cup the last few years. But no real long-term experience. Is that a problem? I'm not quite sure. I think the biggest problem they have is they don't really have a number one goalie. And nobody who's played like a number one goalie, other than Crawford, who probably isn't, in the mixes yet.
Well, as it currently stands, they've got five goalies at camp, right? They've got Crawford, Holtby, Luongo, Price, and Smith. When I'm looking on the back end, there's a few names that actually stand out there. In particular, Bouwmeester, Doughty, Ham Hughes, Duncan Keith, Seabrook, and Shea Weber. Up front, they're just stacked. I mean, there's so many guys up front that can light the lamp on a regular basis. It's actually kind of frightening when you look at the amount of talent that's up front.
You look at the rest of the Olympic teams, and the same can be said. You look at the U.S. goaltending, and it's better than the Canadian goaltending right now. If you go by what have you done for me lately?
Yeah, no, that is true. What we can see here. By the way, did you see the new USA hockey jerseys?
No. Wasn't Kessel wearing one? Didn't they show Kessel with one?
They're horrible. The basic design is cool. You know, it's blue down to the mid-chest, and then it's white sleeves and red piping. But what they've actually done is they've taken little star-shaped iron-on decals that are the same color as the blue and put them all over the top. And they've also put in fake little iron-on decal laces. It looks absolutely horrible.
I'll have to check it out.
Picture to send you because, dude, it looks bad.
Okay, so that's the Canadian Olympic hockey team. Next, this issue with the Blue Jays keeping their manager on. What do you think of that move?
I'll be honest, John Gibbons hasn't been entirely bad for the team. I mean, he's doing the best he can with what he's got. I understand that it's the coach's job to be a motivator and
hang
to inspire the
second. Hang
what?
On a second. This is the
what?
This is the part. This is the part that makes me Aaron. I'm going to come over there and get Scottish all over you now. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable the slack that this guy's been given. This friggin' moron. I'm just kidding. He's not a moron. They turned loose the purse strings in a manner unheard of in Toronto in the past 20 some odd years, 25, 30 years. Since the middle 90s, right? 20 years
mm-hmm.
ago. They've turned the purse strings loose. They gave this kid GM with no experience who had no business being a general manager. I'm sorry. Not because he's not smart, not because he's not brilliant, not because he doesn't deserve to be a general manager down the road, but they're going to spend all this money and they give it to a guy with no experience. And he promptly hires a manager who wasn't even managing and wasn't even working for a major league team. And he brings him on board to run the team. I mean, if you're going to spend the kind of money the Blue Jays did, they should have spent it on the manager as well. Because one thing's for sure, as much as you want to suggest, and I disagree, that he didn't have the makings of a good team, that guy Gibbons, there's that guy Farrell, who's in Boston right now, who's doing a lot more with what people thought was a lot less. And he was manager of the Blue Jays. So if Farrell's doing okay, and he wasn't doing okay in Toronto, and now you got Gibbons here, and he's not doing well in Toronto, where's the problem? Yep, hate to say it, they hired the wrong GM, and they gave the wrong guy the keys to the vault. And that's what's happening here. He's got to go. They got to get a GM this summer that understands the game, understands the history, and is able to make moves that pay off, not that explode at contact. I'm very disappointed in the Blue Jays and how they wasted all this money in another season. So I interrupted you. Go ahead with Gibbons.
No, hey, no, that's cool. You know, I mean, let's be honest. Everybody started the season thinking we have this amazing roster of players. We're going right to the top. Oh, don't worry about spring training. No, that's just, you know, we're supposed to be gelling during spring training, and it never really happened. I don't know if you can necessarily blame that on the manager directly, or if it's more a problem with the personalities of the players, or if it's too many Chiefs, not enough Indians, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, the thing of it is, Aaron, simply put, it isn't Gibbons' fault. I'm not blaming Gibbons. Gibbons shouldn't have been here. So I'll make it clear who I'm blaming, and that's Anthopoulos.
Anthopoulos.
He failed
yep.
miserably.
Well, you know,
he
I think you know who I really blame? See, because the fact that the Jays aren't winning, and I'm sorry to cut you off, Frank, but this is funny. The fact that the Jays aren't winning shows crappy customer service, which is emblematic of their owners.
Oh, I get it. You're making the Rogers connection.
I'm on fire.
Well, let me say this about the Rogers thing. Rogers doesn't know how to compete. All right? This is my beef about Rogers. You want my beef about Rogers owning a franchise? They
sure.
don't know how to compete because they only know how to be handed money, not for competing, but just for providing a service. And that's it. You know, the limits of what Rogers does, they get a good return. But, you know, they're shooting fish in a barrel when it comes to what they do. It's a license. They're given a license and literally a license to print money. Literally, in my opinion.
No, it is. It is quite literally a license to print money. That's the problem.
And, you know, they don't have to compete.
And the fact of the matter is, with them and the Jays, there's no obligation for them whatsoever to actually produce. You know, they had two wins. The Jays had two World Series wins, and that seems to be enough for them to coast on for the rest of the year, or for the rest of the decade, actually, that they haven't won. It's just unbelievable to me that it works out like that.
Well, remember, in baseball is a great sport. And the reason it's a great sport is that you don't lose money in baseball. And the reason you don't lose money is it you can't spend enough to lose money. Look at the Yankees. Look at the Red Sox. You know, and even the teams who don't spend a lot of money, they make
a lot
of money.
Well, the other difference is both teams win.
Yeah, well, sure. Well, look at the Pirates after 20 years.
Oh, good God, I was waiting for you to get around to them.
Right? Look at the Pirates. Haven't won in 20 years. Look what they're doing. Miami. They unloaded, two-thirds of their salary. They're not doing any worse than they were last year.
Nope.
And they've got some young prospects, thanks to the Jays, that are looking pretty good.
Yeah, what did we get in return from them? I can't remember.
Doesn't matter. The shortstop's okay. He just didn't play a lot. That's all. And the pitchers they got, they supposedly got two really great pitchers, Johnson and Burrell, I think. Was it Burrell they got from? No, Burrell they got from, it doesn't matter anyway. Chicago? No, it doesn't
somewhere else.
Yeah, somewhere else. But you know that. Let's be honest, okay, Aaron. Let's be honest. They were mismanaged this year in more ways than one. You get that? You see how I did that? They were mismanaged. So they weren't only mismanagered; they were misgeneral managed. And I don't even blame Anthopoulos for what he did. I blame the people who hired him to be the GM. It's the same mistake the Leafs made when they hired their rookie, Mr. Ferguson. When they hired Ferguson. Same thing, no experience. But this is a bright young mind. Great. This is what you're looking for, a bright young mind. You're gonna help this bright young mind become a better, you know, GM for somebody else. Look what they did with Farrell. We had Farrell here, first time GM here, and obviously he learned a lot while he was here in Toronto. Look at his Red Sox.
He took the valuable lessons he learned elsewhere.
That's what he did. He hitched it all to the back of his car, put it in the trunk, and now the Red Sox are a great team just because he has the experience as a manager now. And, you know, he's working with a better organization. Ta-da! Now he looks like a genius. All right. Well, I think that's enough. That's enough about the Blue Jays. Now let's talk some serious stuff now. And I really want to talk about this one. And I want to talk about it in about 3-4 minutes and save us some time for the Ticats, who, by the way, are losing right now, 21-9. I think I saw
21-6.
Oh, so they got a TD.
Yes,
last
sir.
Possession. Good. NFL. And the concussion payout, $350 million, whatever it was, or $750 million. Yeah, yeah. To former players. It appears that they dodged a bullet by doing that. It's clear that they would have been dragged through the mud, literally. There would have been some real horrible PR situations for the NFL. They dodged a massive bullet. What do you think of that settlement?
Well, I'm just looking at the number of people that are affected by it. $765 million spread out over, basically it works out to $1.2 million over 20 years per team. That's about $150,000 per concussed player. That's it. That's all. I don't know about American insurance and their health care there, but I'm not sure how much treatment that $150,000 is actually going to pay for.
That,
you know,
again.
Now, some of the details here, it actually calls for payouts of up to $5 million for players suffering from Alzheimer's, $4 million for the families of those who died of brain injuries known as chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, and up to $3 million for players suffering from dementia. The NFL is also going to be paying for medical exams and devote $10 million towards medical research. But the actual amounts per player, I don't know what health care prices are like in the States for mental care, but that's what you're looking at. I mean, basically what it amounts, according to some players, is $765 million worth of hush money.
That's what it is. It absolutely is hush money. That's the effect it's going to have. It just ensured there were no more lawsuits. That's all it did.
Yeah.
When I was reading the article today, I think they said it was like 5% of the total income of the NFL.
Wow, that's kind of frightening, isn't it?
Well, when you think about it, 5%.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
it's
a significant investment on the part of the NFL. Don't get me wrong.
It sounds like 5%. A lot of money, but
yeah.
But there's a lot of people who have suffered to help make that league what it is, and 5% of what they're making doesn't seem to rise up to justice, in my opinion. But you know what?
No,
they had legal representation. They had legal representation, and. You know, you may not agree with the way things work out, but there was an opportunity there for them to voice their opinion. The NFL voiced their opinion, and then they stepped outside and they said, "How about this amount?" And both parties agreed. And that's what justice is. Now, is it fair? It's like when you do the math, does it work? We can argue about that, but it is justice. I mean, it was that or another option, which might have been nothing. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm not taking the side of the NFL here. I'm just being a big boy here and going, well, you had your day in court. Hope it worked for you. You know?
No, I hear you.
So, do you think,
I don't know. I mean,
it's
difficult
leagues?
To gauge. I mean, again, like I said, some of the problem is I don't know how far the money that they get is actually going to go. You know?
Well,
will it
absolutely.
Be enough to free throw?
You and I both know that if you have a cough and you go into the hospital and one or two or three tests in the U.S. and there's $100,000, a hospital room for a couple of days is like $40,000.
Now, see, this is what blows my mind. In India, coronary bypass graft surgery costs $1,600. In Canada, it costs $10,400. In the States, it's $106,000.
There you go.
Does that not blow your mind?
Well, I don't think I could say it does anything else but blow my mind.
You know, I mean, like, you just sit there and you look at this and you think to yourself, okay, great, so these people are getting this much, and families of deceased players who died from, you know, concussive brain injuries and encephalopathy, they get this. That doesn't leave a whole heck of a lot for everybody else. I mean, there's approximately 18,000 former players. Of those 18,000 former players, you're looking at about 4,500 to 5,000 players. That's about 30% that are affected. You know, I mean, that's a huge percentage. So
a large
yeah,
percentage.
But, you know, is it enough? How much is enough? You know, how deeply should they try to bleed the NFL? I don't know. I mean,
well,
it's kind of like feeding the golden goose.
Whether it's enough or not, let's move to the next question that raises. Will the National Hockey League be in the same boat soon?
Probably, but to judge by the way Bettman has run it, probably not going to happen. As harsh and cruel as it sounds, I don't think Bettman knows his ass from his elbow. And I don't think he's smart enough to realize that this is something the NHL is definitely going to be facing. And when you look at guys who are cut short like Lindros, both of them,
mm-hmm.
and guys like Scott Stevens, you know, how can it not?
That's right. Totally true. All right, so it's not going to affect the National Hockey League tomorrow, but we both agree down the road, you know, the Piper's coming.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. I totally believe that. The Piper's coming when it comes to hockey. All right, let's get on to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I'm going to call it 15 minutes of heaven because if you're a Tie Cat fan. They have gone from being a team like Edmonton and Winnipeg to basically being one game behind the Toronto Argonauts. And, you know, should they win tonight, and they're only 5 points behind BC, they could end up being pretty soon tied for first place.
You just got to wonder, though. Those fans must be crazy dedicated. Because I can't think of any Toronto fans, honestly, that would be willing to make the drive week in and week out to see their team play in another city.
Well, you know what, Aaron? Here's the thing about that. It isn't one of those things where there was a choice. Nobody voted on that. It's the way it worked out.
Yeah.
So, you know how it is. You do what you can, you get by. And the team itself is taking a financial hit, you know, this year. Don't be mistaken. You know they're not budgeting according to where they're playing. They're budgeting according to building a team, and Austin would have had no part of it if he didn't have the rein to actually build a team. And I think he's doing a great job. And I have to admit, I had some doubts about Burris. I think the GM, I'm going to call him the GM, the VP, the man, the coach. I happen to think that he had maybe not doubts in his quarterback, but I believe he felt a need to motivate him and let him know that he could be gone. And I believe that message was sent. And congratulations to Burris for rising to the challenge, if you will.
He's not related to Plaxico, is he?
No.
I
don't know. Is he?
I have no idea. I'm just sort of throwing that out there. I don't think he is.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. BC Lions are looking to lose another game by a point.
Wow.
They missed a field goal, Aaron.
That just happened.
Yep, they missed the field goal. And last week, what happened last week? Do you remember what happened to BC last week?
Mm-hmm. This is going to be a bro.
Hey, you know, it could very well happen again. But this time it could be, well, I don't know, I forgot to notice how much time was left, but I think there's a lot of time left in the game.
Yeah, there's a good solid 12 and a half minutes left. They actually just started the fourth quarter.
Yeah, there you go. So there's lots of time. But the numbers are nice. The numbers work out to being exciting. It's great when the score is like that, eh? Where you know, 6 points and then you can see in the coach's face literally BC is about to shit the bed one more time.
Well,
as
I know Jerry
friend
will
of mine
be happy.
Would say. Absolutely. We should text him and find out how he's feeling about this game. Get him to call. Maybe I should call him. No, I guess he's at the cottage.
Oh, sure.
Huh?
Why not? We got time. We got 8 minutes.
Isn't he at the cottage? Isn't he at the cottage?
Oh, he may be. I think he may be, yeah.
I wonder if he thinks it'd be worth answering the phone. Hey, why don't we find out?
I should say, there's only one way to find out.
We're going to call him. So what do you think has been the big turnaround for Hamilton right now? I'll say it's the coach. He's really battened down the hatches with his team, and I think he's doing an excellent job of motivating his team. And like I said earlier, I think he did a great job when it comes to Burris. I think he's given Burris his marching orders.
No, I think it is the fact that he would have read the riot act to Burris, and I think Burris has come to realize that he may have the looks, but those aren't going to carry him forever, and he better have something else. So he stepped up his quarterbacking game. But yeah,
sure
no, I really think that it has something to do with the fact that the coach and GM has taken a firm handle on the team. He's got a clearly defined vision of where he wants the team to go. So that's a plus.
There's no doubt. He's a great GM. That is for sure. Now, he's the vice president as well. So he's got all these handles, and he's handling those handles quite well, isn't he?
I think so. No, I mean, it seems to me that he's doing a really good job with the...
We'll see if he picks up, Aaron.
Hello?
Jared.
Who's this?
It's Frank and Aaron.
Hey, Frank. How are you?
Say hi to Aaron.
Hi, Aaron.
Are you watching the game, Jared?
Yeah.
Excellent. What do you think?
Okay, we're only going to bother you for a minute, Jared. Tell us about what's happened in the game thus far, and why has Hamilton made the big turn? Because they really have. They're 4-4 on the season right now. They got a shot here if they take what BC's given them to basically be tied with the Argos in first place.
Well, I think reception is crappy.
Della Hunts went down with what seems to be an ACL. Hello?
That just happened, yeah.
Yep.
You were attending him.
Yeah, and then
But I think the turnaround is the offense is bought into Austin's offense, and they played against you know, Winnipeg, so you can't help but build your confidence against them. And this is a back and forth game right now, and I think if Hamilton scores one more touchdown, it'll basically be the last team who has the ball that'll win the game.
Lots of time, 12 minutes in the fourth quarter. We won't take you much longer away from the game. So, Jared, listen, congratulations on the turnaround for Hamilton. I'm very proud of the turnaround they've made. They are my second favorite team, and I'm glad to see they've turned things around.
Well, they just got to keep it going, right? And big game next week, not only for the team, but CFL Fans Fight Cancer is doing one of their fundraising merchandise sales again. So anyone going to the game should come by our table and get either a bandana, a bottle koozie, or a seat cushion, or all three. And part of the proceeds go to Wellwood.
I'll be there for Thanksgiving weekend.
Awesome. Look forward to seeing you. You got to come by our tailgate, Frank.
We will. We will. We'll be taking the bus with some other Argo fans.
Oh, good. Good. Good stuff.
Yeah, we
and you guys are well?
Aaron?
Yes, we most definitely are.
Okay, good. Good.
He was about to kill me at the beginning of the program.
Oh. Why is that?
I'll let you take that, Aaron.
Oh, we were discussing the police.
Oh, what, the band or the police?
The actual police.
Oh, okay.
Should be police.
Oh, beautiful reception.
Pass.
And Ellingson, that rookie Ellingson, that was beautiful. Greg Ellingson, and he's hurt. Yeah.
He almost got killed on the congratulation. We had a minor difference with the police.
Oh, jeez.
Aaron thinks the police should be allowed to do anything they want. They shouldn't be restricted in any way.
I won't get into this because I'm on my cell phone and I'm cheap right now.
Hey, listen, I'll let you go. Like I said, I know you're on your cell phone. It's my fault you're on your cell phone. Enjoy the cottage. Give the wife a hug for us.
I'm not at the cottage, man. We have no car from the flood. We have nothing, so I'm at home. And we're just watching the game. Yeah.
Well, I could have called you on your home line then.
Yeah. But
I apologize then, Jared.
No worries. No harm. I'm glad you're doing well.
Okay,
and I'm gonna get back to the game if that's okay.
Enjoy the game.
Okay, talk to you later, guys.
Bye.
Later, Jared.
Okay. Bye bye.
Okay. He almost made another catch, Aaron.
Right in the end zone. Jeez.
There we go. It's going to be a big
finish.
Oh, this
is going gangbusters here.
Okay, so we've only got a minute left in the show, so we can watch the rest of the game. But I guess we should say goodbye to all the folks who are listening. First of all, Aaron, thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me on again, Frank. Thanks for letting me spout off and vent my spleen, and thanks for listening.
Well, I think it went well. I think we had some really interesting topics to discuss. It's too bad nobody used the 714-242-5250 number, but that's because I didn't tell them it existed. Maybe I should have done that.
Well, you know, I mean, if you put the link up on Facebook and they click on it, the number's right there. So
there you go. There you go. Okay,
if they
Aaron
can't be bothered
Morgan
to pick up the phone and dial themselves, we probably don't want to talk to them anyways.
There you go. So that's Aaron William of Freeland, my partner on Friday nights, Friday night free-for-all. Go Ticats, that's all I can say. They look good. They look good. They look like they could win this game. And for those of you that have been listening, thank you for tuning in. Of course, this is Candid Frank Live, heard on Blog Talk Radio. Hope to hear you again or see you again and have you hear us. And I hope to hear from you at some point, and hope that's real soon. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you on Monday for Argo Night. And again, once again, Wednesday is the National Night. We'll talk to you later. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great one. Bye-bye.